From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll also take a look at the cash grain market, that with Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and hear from Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago about the forecast for the Midwest. It's going to get hot and then cool. And we'll have some rain. Then he says it'll be dry. So you'll want to stay with us right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for all of that. And our interview with John Newton. He is the chief economist for AFBF. That's the American Farm Bureau Federation. WillAg.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is now here from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us. Interesting week. I bet the charts have changed at least a little bit. Can you tell me what you've been seeing?
Well, we did finish the month of July with a monthly reversal to the upside. Now, in wheat, it was an outside month to the upside. So that was the most powerful monthly reversal you could post. And it was on the wheat chart. And you can see that wheat now has been able to show some upside follow through on that reversal. So it's actually the leader of the commodity complex right now. And fundamentally, it's basically driven by declining wheat crop prospects in Europe, and ideas that eventually some of the export market will come back to the United States, and we'll have a little better outlook for wheat exports. Now, on December corn and November soybeans, we did have what we would call as a hook reversal. It did not take out the previous month's high, but we did take out the previous month's low and then closed out higher. Now, statistically, you know, July is one of these months, about 8 out of 10 years, you close lower during July. So anytime you get a higher close during the month of July for corn and soybeans, that is very counter-seasonal. Now, one of the people that follows me on Twitter, Bob Hobbs, he sent back to me a statistic that over a 49-year period, over the past 49 years, we had monthly reversals 17 times in that period, and 14 of those had bullish outcomes. So the odds, at least statistically from a technical perspective, does favor that these monthly reversals that were posted in corn, soybeans, and wheat implies that we're going to move higher as we go on into harvest, and then we'll kind of go from there. I guess I'll take one month at a time. I don't want to get too bullish because the long shot does win once in a while. So about 14 out of 17, that's pretty good percentages that we may have we'll have a bullish outcome on the charts as we go forward. But, you know, you look at the FC Stone production estimate yesterday, obviously the trade must be already priced in somewhat in the trade, or the trade doesn't believe it. I don't know what the case is. I do know there's some awfully good crops out there. But I do think, you know, there's parts of central Illinois and central Indiana and in the eastern Corn Belt that things may not be quite as good as what everybody thinks. But, you know, the crop rating levels stay high. The weather pattern now has actually moderated, got more rain in it. It's a little wetter. And this is the month that soybeans are made. So I think that's one of the reasons why soybeans was lower here today, but it did bounce off their lows, but we don't know how we closed yet. But beans, I think, are probably getting some pressure from favorable outlook for the month of August and ideas that maybe that FC Stone yield can be attained. It'll be interesting to see what USDA tells us, I think, next Friday, I think, is when their report is.
Indeed it is, on the 10th, about a wheat-led rally, especially one coming out of Europe. Wheat, a Northern Hemisphere crop, for the most part, meaning Australia does grow quite a bit of wheat, but the bulk of the wheat, Argentina as well, but the bulk of the wheat grown in the Northern Hemisphere. Can it lead the rest of the commodities up for very long?
Well, we still have the trade situation to deal with. And I don't, you know, I mean, if we're going to raise the crop that F.C. Stone published yesterday, if USDA goes along with those numbers or even go with some higher numbers, we actually got a bigger problem than I think China trade, because that is we're going to be building stocks. And then if we're in a rising interest rate market and a rising dollar market, we're going to have a lot of headwinds. But no, I haven't given up the idea that Trump may pull a rabbit out of the hat on this trade situation. But I don't, it's not going to happen tomorrow or next week. But I do think that is an issue that we're going to have to deal with. There's an issue here of some big ending stocks that we have to deal with. A lot of farmers still have to clean out their bins. A lot of elevators still have to get some grain moved out to be able to handle it all. We're going to have an early harvest. I don't know if it'll be a fast harvest or a slow harvest. We'll see what kind of, maybe we'll start raining as September 1 comes, and then it'll slow things down. But we still have some big supply problems on the balance sheet. But like I said, you know, technically I have to kind of take a bullish stance. One of our Twitter followers, Garrett Timmons, says that there's a death, taxes, and a bullish Zwicker. So I guess that's a new one on me. Like I told him, actually, I made a name for myself being a big bear during the middle 80s as we went into those 27-year cycle lows. But I, you know, I got to be friendly, but I also got to recognize that, you know, this crop, if the crop is as big as F.C. Stone says it is, I think we got a lot of supply problems coming at us, and the market's going to have a lot of headwind trying to recover. But technically, I guess I'm still in the gamut. You know, wheat's making new highs for the year. I still think corn can do a 50% retracement, and I haven't ruled out soybeans doing a 50 to a 60% retracement. They did do the 38%. Now we're consolidating, pulling back. If the market can kind of hold together here and then take out the early week high next week, then we're off, I think, to the 62% level. And that same way with corn. I think if we can take out those Tuesday's highs, then we're off to the 50% retracement level or even more. And if wheat continues to climb higher, maybe everything will get behind wheat and kind of just tag along on the draft and see how high this thing can go.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Okay, very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Those F.C. Stone survey numbers that he's been talking about put the yield at 178.1 bushels to the acre for corn and 51.5 for soybeans. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by the chief economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation from Washington, D.C., a friend of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, because, well, he worked here for a while. John Newton, thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations on becoming the chief economist.
Thanks a lot, Todd. It really is an honor to represent American Farm Bureau Federation, as well as all of our state farm bureaus across the country, in this role. I think one of the things that has prepared me for this, as you indicated, the time I spent there at the University of Illinois, traveling around the state, meeting with growers, learning from folks like Daryl Good, Scott Irwin and Phil Garcia really prepared me for this opportunity at American Farm Bureau.
Well, let's take you through your paces at this point and see where AFBF lands and what's on the list. I think we probably should start with trade. This week, well, all this year, in fact, the Trump administration has been working through trade issues, especially as it's related to agriculture. China has been on the forefront. Soybeans and other agricultural products are the primary exports from the U.S. to that nation. Where do we stand today?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's like a game of hot potato if you read the news. One day you hear that we're going to come to some sort of negotiating table by the end of July, and then the next day you read that we're going to ramp the tariffs up from 10% to 25%. So, you know, this is a really big issue. It's a big challenge. Certainly, if you read the USTR's report on 301 issues regarding China, some of the practices that they engage in with respect to trade are certainly things that need to be addressed. I think, you know, our members recognize that. They certainly also recognize that the impact it's having on their financial position when you see commodity prices declining sharply in recent months. You know, that has a real impact on profitability. Not only that, you think about what it could potentially do going forward. Some of those marketing relationships that we've worked so long to build could be in jeopardy if we're not viewed to be a reliable and consistent supplier to the world. So I think, you know, there's certainly a lot of concern, and I travel the country quite a bit, and I think one of the things I've heard most frequently is are all these efforts really designed to make Brazil great again instead of making U.S. agriculture great again? So we definitely need to see a quick resolution on these trade issues. Farmers want trade, not aid, but we also know that aid package of $12 billion does provide some temporary relief in light of the lower prices that farmers are seeing across the country.
Do we have an idea what the Trump administration might be hoping to accomplish in its trade packages? Meaning, what is the larger goal as it relates to the United States and its place on the world stage and the global market?
Well, the administration's made no secret that one of the key indicators that they look at with respect to trade is the trade deficit. And the U.S. has a trade deficit of about $500 billion a year. We have a trade surplus in agriculture and in services, but the net trade balance is negative. And the administration looks at that as the U.S. losing in trade agreements. So that's really the motivation here. But I would encourage anyone to go to the USTR's website and read that report on the 301 probe against China. Some of the things that they've been doing with respect to intellectual property and their engagement strategies when it comes to trade with the United States and U.S. companies is a concern. And I think the administration is not out of line in trying to get these things fixed, make China behave better when it comes to these issues. You think about for agriculture, biotechnology approval, and, you know, getting China to speed up and get rid of some of those regulatory barriers to trade and make them a better actor is long overdue. China is a very, very large economy, and some of the practices certainly aren't beneficial to the United States. So I think farmers and ranchers, when you read that report, you recognize what needs to be done, but there are also proper dispute settlement mechanisms for these kind of things. A tit-for-tat tariff war, certainly in this case, with agriculture being on the front lines, hurts a lot of our farmers and ranchers first.
So the risk versus the benefits in the way it's being accomplished at this point don't seem to be correct to you. You would go through the WTO or the World Trade Organization, and I don't want to put words into your mouth.
Well, there's all kinds of ways that these kind of disagreements can be resolved. Certainly sitting down and having negotiations on these issues. But you know, we import a lot of products from China. Putting a tariff on every single item that we import from China will hurt farmers and ranchers, especially as they not only do they retaliate on our products, but some of the things that we purchase from China, not only the steel and aluminum that we use in farm equipment or the grain bins, but you talk about some of the crop protection chemicals that we may need to buy. you're running into a scenario where not only are we potentially looking at lower prices, but we could see input cost for some of the things that we need go up as a result of this. And the combined effect only squeezes the farmer even more.
Let's turn our attention to the Farm Bill. This week, the Senate pushed through their committee members to conference, meaning they passed the legislation, allows the Farm Bill go to conference with the House. The House is away on recess. We won't take this up for some time. What are the important points that need to be resolved between the House and the Senate versions of the bill, and how quickly can that happen?
Well, I'll tell you, when you look at the Farm Bill, both as passed out of the House and Senate, one of the big wins for agriculture, especially when you put yourself back in the Corn Belt, is that crop insurance, for the most part, remained unscathed. We didn't see any of the negative poison pill amendments that we've traditionally had to fight on the crop insurance front. Those did not make it. There was a proposal in the House to really gut the crop insurance program, and I think agriculture really came together to defeat that. You look at the farm programs, your ARC and your PLC, they mostly remained unchanged. I think there's some modest tinkering around the edges there. So that's another big win. But one of the things that they do differ on, and they differ considerably on, is AGI of $700,000, moving that down from $900,000, as well as actively engaged rules. The House Ag Committee recognizes that farms have different business structures and provide a little bit more flexibility on the actively engaged rules, whereas the Senate, Senator Grassley, worked to get tighter rules on actively engaged in the Senate Farm Bill. But when it comes to that, Mr. Grassley's not one of the conferees, so we'll see how the House and Senate ultimately conference that together. But the biggest issues are going to be the nutrition title and the conservation title. The Senate title leans much more closely with where the conservation groups want to see the Title II of the Farm Bill, whereas the House bill puts in some fairly meaningful changes with respect to the Conservation Stewardship Program, merging that with the EQIP program, ratcheting down the rental rates on the CRP program. So the House does a lot of things in that area. They do provide some avenues to address swamp buster issues for prior converted wetlands as it pertains to crop insurance and farm programs. And then the nutrition title, as I indicated, that's going to be another one that we're going to have to find a compromise. And I ultimately think if we're going to get a bill done, the compromise is going to look a lot closer to the Senate version, much more bipartisan in nature than what we saw out of the House nutrition title with their work requirements.
How important is it that Mitch McConnell is on the Senate conferees as opposed to Senator Thune, who would have spearheaded the conservation proposal, and Senator Grassley, who spearheaded the actively engaged proposal? And what does that mean for this compromise you just talked about as it relates to work requirements and SNAP?
Well, you do know I'm from Kentucky, right? So obviously, in my opinion, it's a very good thing to have the you know, ranking member of the Senate on the Farm Bill Conference Committee. I think his desire to see a farm bill done shortly after the Labor Day holiday provides the fuel, puts the gasoline on the fire to hopefully get this done before the farm bill expires September 30th. But we've got, you know, a lot of challenges to overcome, as I indicated in those two titles. But having Mr. McConnell on board is good for the hemp provisions that he had in the Senate Farm Bill, but also bodes well to getting it done on time.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Anytime.
John Newton is the chief economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, AFBF. He is in Washington, D.C. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Tell me about this week as you've seen it unfold to this point.
Well, you know, up through the close on Tuesday, we were looking at 11 out of 12 straight days of higher closes for corn and beans. You know, then we ended up giving back some of it there on Wednesday on corn and a little more protracted losses on beans. But the Tuesday gains were, you know, pretty impressive. And so, you know, there's certainly a little bit of skepticism from those that had been fairly short corn and beans, and I feel like they maybe feel like they overdid it just a little bit, covering some of those short positions, giving us a nice little retracement rally.
And the timing at this point in the year, can we maintain that in some respect, potentially because we're now in the month of August?
You know, that's the thing. This has been just a wild year. You know, making a high in the month of May is what it, you know, kind of looks like we might be looking at. And then you go, you know, you go through a very warm June still, and you're dropping the market based upon not only good crop conditions raised, but of course the tariff situation. Get a little bit of tariff relief the other day, and we take the market up 27 cents on beans. So market's obviously very sensitive to that. But at this stage of the game, you know, within like, you know, some of these numbers coming out, 178 and 51, we get those kind of yields, it's probably going to be tough to rally right now.
Do you think USDA's numbers, when they publish them on the 10th of August next week, will be that large?
You know, I struggle to see that right now. I think that they'll stair-step into it. Their verdict's out. You know, there's a lot of folks saying we matured way too quickly. We don't feel like we were able to build as big an ear as what, you know, the rainfall totals and the energy that we gave to the corn plant might suggest. But bottom line is, I think that they'll still be around last year's yield for corn, which would be pretty big. And I can't imagine they would be much under 50 bushels. You know, given your crop condition reports, I would say that's probably where they're going to land is, well, maybe 176 and, you know, 49.5-50.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenner is here, as usual, from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd. I hope all is going well for you.
It is. I'm in Fargo and expecting some really warm weather very soon. Let's start with that part of the forecast.
Well, we do have a big warm-up that is taking place as we speak. The reason for that is because we have a large system in Canada, and that is developing a large feed of southerly winds. Those will initially bring high temperatures into the 90s across the plains, and then with time, we'll start to see some of that heat move into the Corn Belt, so that by the time we get into Sunday, pretty much everybody will be fairly warm with high temperatures in the upper 80s to middle 90s.
And does it cool off after that?
Well, that's the other side of the coin. Once that system moves a little bit further to the east and essentially reaches the Great Lakes, that will allow cooler air to dump in behind it. So we will see a cool down once we move into Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday coming up. And the way it looks now, another cool front is likely to follow just a couple of days later. By the time you put all of that together, this period of heat that we're looking at right now is very unlikely to last more than a few days, and will end up turning seasonable to cool as next week progresses.
With the dump of the cool weather, will we get rainfall?
Well, the cool fronts will produce some thunderstorms here and there. The best chances for those are initially in the Northwest Corn Belt this weekend. So Minnesota, Nebraska, areas by you in the eastern Dakotas. Some storms around Saturday and Sunday. As we move through Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, that front will sweep on through the Corn Belt, and that will produce some thunderstorms for pretty much all corn and soybean areas, and then eventually reach the Delta by the end of the week. Now, we're not looking for heavy rainfall with this setup, but most areas will see a half inch on the low side to 1.5 inches on the high side. So around 1 inch of rain is coming up between Saturday and Thursday, and that is one thing that we'll watch. But that's just kind of the way it looks at this point in time.
That'll bring us through to the end of the first full week of August on the 11th, a Saturday. What do we see after that? Do we dry out?
It does look like we are going to dry out for about a week or maybe even 10 days. And there's two reasons for that. Number one is the cool air mass. That cool air is relatively dry, and it will be feeding in from the north. That's not typically a setup where you would receive heavy rainfall. So part number one says that we'll start to dry out. The second part of the puzzle is that all of the hot air that we're going to experience all over the next couple of days is going to be located off to our west. That will more or less block storm systems from moving across the Corn Belt. So between these two features, it's pretty unlikely to see a wet setup during the 7 to 10 days that follow once rains end next week. So we might be looking for more rain at the middle of the month, and certainly shortly beyond that, especially for soybeans. So even though the temperature side of the forecast is looking pretty good, we would like to see a little bit more rain, especially in those areas that haven't received very much lately. Keep in mind, Indiana and Ohio saw some pretty good totals earlier in the week, even parts of central and southern Illinois. But as you move to the north and west, those are some of the areas that would probably like a little bit more.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.